Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Dervla McTiernan is in studio. You're very welcome. It's lovely to have you here. And you'll be known to crime readers, of course, as the author of the series, including The Ruin, The Scholar and The Good Turn. But this time, Dervla has written a standalone novel. It's called The Murder Rule. And yesterday, Dervla, here in the studio, we welcomed Colm Tobin home from LA. And today we're welcoming you home from Australia. And you were straight on Twitter, we saw, looking for advice on crisps.
Well, there are certain things that are a priority.
Yes.
And, you know, we don't have quite the selection of crisps in Australia that we benefit from in Ireland.
You do get Tato's, though.
We get Tato's. Our local Coles now stocks Tato's and Barry's Tea.
Okay. But what were the ones that you were looking forward to then when you came back?
The discussion was whether I should start with cheese and onion hunky dories or Skips or I think it was what we used to call gravy Tato's, which is like the kind of, the barbecue kind of brown Tato's.
Smoky,
you know?
Bacon.
Smoky bacon Tato's, that's it. Yeah.
What did you go for in the end?
I think I actually went for King's.
Oh, really?
Which is terrible because I usually see them as a really poor second cousin to Tato's.
Oh,
but, you know,
now
sorry,
you've
I know it's
controversial. You know what? We'll never get round to the book now. We'll never get round to the book. That is, wait till you see the text coming in. 51551 on that alone. Listen, the book is number one in Australia.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
3 weeks now, number one, which has never happened to me before. It's been amazing.
And you have a TV deal for this one.
I do. It's FX, which is part of Disney, is adapting it for a limited series.
How exciting.
Amazing.
Can you believe it?
I can't believe it. I mean, I can't believe it. But I can't believe any of this. The whole journey has been a bit surreal. Mm.
But one of your other books, The Ruin, I mean, that's been optioned, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's been optioned. It was optioned by Hopscotch Features and then Colin Farrell has set up his own production company. So he wanted to get involved and have that as one of his first projects.
Mm-hmm. And when did the writing start for you? Because this wasn't always what you did.
No, I was a lawyer for a long time and we left Australia, or left Ireland for Australia in 2011. Now, I had a baby very quickly after that and he didn't sleep for a few years. That slowed me down. But in 2014, I decided, look, I'm going to give this a go. If I don't, I'll always regret not trying. Mm-hmm. But with any career change, you know, you'd commit a lot of time to it. So I said, I'll give it 5 years. I started writing every night except Thursday nights, which was wine night. You can't mess with that.
And were you still working away then?
I was working, yeah. I was working and the kids were very small. But the writing was always my time. It was my time at the end of the day, you know. And so I signed my first contract with HarperCollins in October 2016. And The Ruin came out in 2018. And it's just been go-go
and
since.
Onwards from there.
Yeah.
So had you always had the writing in the back of your mind as this is something I would like to do at some point in the future?
In all honesty, no.
Really?
I know an awful lot of writers say I've always wanted to be a writer. It's not that I wouldn't have loved it. It just felt like it was something for other people. I loved books so much. I think I thought of writers as just sort of magicians, like they could just do it. I didn't understand that it was a craft, like you had to put in the work and that it took time and rewriting to be good. So I just thought that would never be me. Mm-hmm. And then it was only when everything, you know, we really struggled towards the end of our time in Ireland after the crash, the economic crash. And, you know, we tried really hard to kind of do everything according to the rules and it hadn't worked. And so then going to Australia was this sort of freedom for us in a way. We could try anything we wanted to and not feel bad about it.
So was post-crash Ireland the reason why you yeah. left? It was just too difficult to move on from it or?
I had a little practice in the West and it was doing great. And then it really wasn't during in the aftermath of the crash. And, you know, clients needed you probably more than ever, but they weren't in a position to pay their bills through no fault of their own. It just got harder to make ends meet until it became impossible. And I was also very burned out, you know, really burned out and really struggling just mentally and emotionally. I guess a lot of us were at that stage. And I just knew I could never practice law again. So we went to Australia really kind of with fingers and toes crossed, hoping to start anew. We were starting from the very beginning, really.
Very brave thing to do.
Looking back, it feels that way. At the time, it didn't feel that way. Maybe because there weren't very many other options and because we were still young enough that we could do that, you know. We could start again. I know a lot of people were 5 years, 6 years further on from us and that wasn't an option for them. So we felt lucky, really.
How would you feel about coming back?
Do you know, I'm torn about it. I really miss family and I miss being in Ireland, but my husband is pretty keen on Perth and the children are very Australian.
See, that's the thing. And once your children start school and they become embedded with their little friends and their social lives and their activities, I mean, can you imagine turning around to them saying, now we're going to go across the world.
And the sunshine. They would not know what to do with the difference in weather and culture and everything. I think it would be more of a shock for them than they realise, you know.
Now, let's talk about the book because I'm not surprised that this has been optioned because it reads like a script. It's just rock and roll. You can't, it's one of those ones. I've been up late every night this week reading this book. I normally am asleep before 11. I haven't been asleep before 11 any night because this thing is like rock and roll. Next chapter, next chapter, next chapter. So we've got Hannah, who is managed to inveigle her way into the Innocence Project, working for them, and she's a law student. She is the main character, but we don't really like her. Is that, was that fair? I'm not sure whether
I
like her or not.
You're not the first person to say that. A lot of people say, oh, I'm not sure I like that Hannah girl. And I sort of do like, I like her a lot actually, but she's a bit of wish fulfillment for me. I should, I hesitate to admit that because she's quite ruthless.
Mm-hmm. She is.
But I, when I was a young lawyer, I really second guessed myself a lot. Like a lot of young women did in those days. You know, we sort of think, did I do that right? Was that received well? You know, this, all this kind of monologue in your head. It's such a waste of time. It took me a long time to grow out of that. Hannah's not like that at all. Like she knows she's good at things. Where she goes wrong is that she's utterly convinced she's right about things.
Yes.
So yeah, she's a mixed bag in the beginning. But I think there are reasons that she is the way she is. And I think she grows up a lot over the course of the story.
And will you explain to our listeners what the murder rule is?
Yeah, the murder rule refers to the felony murder rule, which is this weird little bit of law that says if you commit a felony and there's a there's a death during the felony, you can be held responsible for murder. So, you know, it has resulted in some really odd convictions in the States in particular. So there's one situation where a guy committed an armed robbery, pretty serious offence, but he was caught, he was arrested, he was handcuffed, he was put in the back of the police car. And while he was handcuffed in the back of the police car, the police officer shot his accomplice dead, his friend. And the guy still in handcuffs was found guilty of that murder, because it was in the course of a felony. Another situation where a young man was at a party, he's having a few drinks, friend of a friend asked if he could borrow the car. He said, yeah, okay, no problem. Went home, went to bed, and he was arrested, convicted and jailed for felony murder because the guy who borrowed the car went to a woman's house, broke in. She was there with a male friend. There was a fight and he killed the friend. And it was held that the person who had lent the car knew that he might break in. He wanted to get his stuff back. There was a whole backstory to it. But the point of this, the rule is, it sort of removes this link between cause and effect that is at the heart of law. When I was a young lawyer, we were taught, you know, to be criminally responsible for an act, you must have both committed it and intended to commit it. And this is not that. So it really fit the story for a lot of reasons. Firstly, because there's a case a bit like that in the story, but also because I was really interested for Hannah. You know, to what degree is she responsible for the outcome of the kind of ruthless acts she takes? Mm-hmm. Is she responsible for everything, whether or not she could foresee it? Should she have foreseen those things? So I was sort of playing around with that idea a bit.
I'm enjoying the contrast between Hannah and her mother as well. Her mother is quite a helpless character. Mm. And her daughter is completely different, even though she's very protective of her mother. Mm. You can almost, without her saying it, you can imagine her saying, I am never going to be that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. You've totally nailed it. That is exactly it. And also because Laura has such needs, Hannah had to be very competent early on. One of the reasons she is the way she is because she's been a carer for most of her life.
And she justifies some of the bad things that she does. She uses her mother to,
she does.
Cover for cover.
She absolutely does. But she's been raised that way. Mm-hmm. She's been raised to think that it's them against the world, the two of them against the world, and everybody owes them something. And Hannah's taken a lot of that on. And I think one of the things about the book is it's her first time away from all that. Suddenly she's exposed to different ways of thinking and different ways of seeing. And the real test for Hannah is she going to be brave enough to see what she's gotten wrong and be willing to change, or is she not?
Yeah. And you see, she's dealing with Camilla and Sean, who are both very clever too. Mm-hmm. Hannah's very clever, but they're also very clever.
Yep.
And she sort of meets her match, doesn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, she really does. Because these are the young law students who volunteer for the Innocence Project. So they're attending the University of Virginia, this very elite law school. So all these kids, to get in there, they've been working for it all their lives. Mm-hmm. They're very focused.
Something you say, we believe only in the facts that suit the story we like, and we ignore everything else. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you mean, and how do you relate that to what's happening on social media?
Oh, I think this is such an interesting thing. Look, I think a lot of us read that Daniel Kahneman book, Thinking Fast and Slow, a few years ago, where he's really talking about, you know, the difference between how we think our brains work versus how they actually work. We think we're so logical. We go out, we examine the evidence, and then we make a decision. But in fact, that's not how we work. That would be exhausting for our brains. We just make a decision and then we go and find evidence that supports our belief. So we encounter the world filled with little biases all the time, which is fine. We've evolved that way. The problem with social media is it's a supercharged version of that. Because of the way the algorithm will feed us what we already agree with, it means that we're becoming more, I think, more embedded in our beliefs, and we feel those things more strongly. So instead of talking to family and friends and community members who might think differently from us, but we already love these people, so we're more inclined to hear differing opinions, we're just getting the same opinions again and again and again from this small tribe. And it's forcing us into different camps. It's really impacting our ability to listen and learn. And we're so much more capable of being manipulated than we realise.
Yeah, because, you know, if you're operating in a circle on social media, and if you believe that this white piece of paper I have in front of me is blue, I'm saying to myself, but everybody in my group, therefore everybody believes that this piece of paper is blue, because I'm not exploring other areas.
Yeah, and it normalises extreme points of view. I think there's a reason we're seeing so many more conspiracy theories and what would seem to be really crazy out there things being embraced by communities. Because if everybody around you is acting like it's normal, you're more inclined to accept it.
So do we just need to be wary of that, or what can we do about it?
I think we need to be wary of it. I think it's larger. I do think we're going to have to do something about regulating some of the bigger platforms, because I do think it's dangerous. And there are people who are very conscious of how these things work who are just hijacking them and using them to manipulate voters, for example. So I think there's some regulation be required. But I think also as individuals, we need to be more conscious of the fact that we just aren't the logical beings we think we are. And I was trying to ask that question a bit in the book without banging people over the heads with it. You know, is Hannah going to look and see the the conflicting evidence, or is she just going to keep in her own narrow mindset?
Yeah, and the other characters too, because they're looking at it from a certain position that they have adopted, and they refuse to see
the other side.
Yeah, is there more to this? I know previously, you know, you had your trilogy. This is standalone. Is this standalone?
It's standalone for now. The next book I'm writing is a different story, but I would be tempted to come back to those characters where they land at the end. I feel like there could be a lot of fun to be had.
I think so. I think there's certainly more to them, but I would highly recommend the book.
Thank you.
If you want to stay up late next week, go out this weekend and get The Murder Rule by Dervla McTiernan, and we wait to see it on screen and your other work as well. Thank you so much. It was lovely
to meet
you.
Thank you so much. Lovely to meet you, Claire.
It's Dervla McTiernan there. Now, in the headlines, the Irish Hospital Consultants Association said today that leaving the eldest and often more vulnerable patients on trolleys or on waiting lists was unacceptable. And that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. Today's programme was produced by David O'Sullivan, research by Ciarán Dunn. Our broadcast coordinator was Louise Kerr-Ross. Aisling Gofferty was on sound. Now it's over to Shea Byrne.